more annoying letters. Bottom of 68. Let's read this and just dissect it as containing all its opposites. I don't have one.
I don't have mine on.
I don't know. Maybe it's God.
No, I don't even turn my.
It sounds like a.
Maybe it's the whole building is where.
Maybe.
That's not a joke. Last year we came for our other Thursday meeting here, and there was a lockout because of something that happened at some school nearby or something. I can't remember. It was a shooting or.
Oh, that was the Butler thing.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh gosh, I missed that by about 30 seconds.
Scary.
Very scary.
Now is that synchronicity or you're unconscious or something?
It was horrible.
Oh, that man, it's so good. So innocent.
Yeah. Are you talking about the policeman, or is this a more recent one?
No, the policeman, that's what.
Yeah, policeman, yeah.
And they locked down all St. Paul's for that.
Oh, did they really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay, my spiritual stagnation is linked with an inhibition of feelings. So far, so good. Yeah. My dreams don't portray that as a personal problem. See? One sentence makes sense, the next one doesn't. Well, you know, in a way you could say it isn't only your personal problem. It is also a general problem, but you have your particular version of it. So that sentence is irrelevant. But as a general one, which should be discussed in the world of men. And yet we just had him asking about his relationship to women. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the fragmented personality.
Well, that's safe. Then he'll never get to the point of it.
But it gets worse.
Well, the general one would include women, wouldn't it, usually? Men.
Yeah. Now, wait. For example, dreams of scientific congresses taking place in Russia's police state. Do you see how bad that is? If it's taking place in a police state, that means no truth is spoken. No truth can be spoken without severe reprisal. Yet he has just said that's where it should take place. It is absolutely nuts. Where no one is allowed to express what one thinks. So he's going to discuss his problem expressing feelings in a place where you can't discuss how you feel, and he doesn't see a contradiction. I think that's the main bit. I mean, no, we don't have to drive ourselves crazy, but you see what we're dealing with. The other thing he does, he just links up the stranger with this Khidir, C-H-I-D-I-R, which is a figure in the Quran. Jung actually writes if I recall, it's the 18th chapter of the Quran. Jung writes a commentary on it. It's not really that important, but, to know all that detail, but the idea is that he shows up in the Quran as a guide. And the only other thing that I would mention that we've already talked about, but just to stress it, that we're talking about now a development on two planes, a development of our understanding of knowledge and science, and a development of Halley's own understanding about the way his knowledge works. So he's being called to deal with the stranger's demands in science and in himself, and these are parallel developments. We already said that. Another thing he mentions, which I'll just touch on, it doesn't say anything new, but it restates in different language this word automorphism, which I really don't know what that is, to be honest with you. But what he says it is it's somehow a form which reproduces itself. So I'm imagining it's a mathematical structure that reproduces through various computations a different proportion of its original form, like a crystal or something like that. But what I don't think we need to understand what it is literally. What he's trying to drive at is he's just given a word for another word for synchronicity. And what a synchronicity does, it reproduces on the outside what is going on the inside. And he's just using a mathematical term, which apparently makes sense to him, it doesn't to us, that synchronicity creates outside what's inside.
So you're saying it's automorphism.
Automorphism.
Is another word for
synchronicity. Yeah, it must be, I think it's a term in set theory and mathematics for when you do these huge multiplication between sets, that certain characteristics in the first set appear in the second set. I think it's something like that. Do you know anything about that, Ken? No, I don't. Oh, and all he's doing is saying that's what the stranger is about. So the stranger is about synchronicity. You could say the same thing. This apparently would say something to people who know about math. I just don't know that much about it.
I don't know if it does. Isn't that the idea in synchronicity that when the person thinks of something new created it, and I guess it comes in the unconscious, that makes it more likely for another person to think that also.
I think that's true. It's not exactly what Jung was driving at with synchronicity, but it's not off the point either. There is a certain...
And that explains why two people like Leibniz and Newton, it's been used to explain that they both thought of calculus about the same thing.
I don't know what to say there. Strictly speaking, no, it's not synchronicity.
Yeah.
Synchronicity is when you have an image in a dream and then you see it in the outer world. And again, I think, I don't want to be too hard on this guy, but this is uncommitted archetypal thinking. So what? So what if the stranger is about reproducing forms? What form is being reproduced in your life now, would be the question.
The whole idea sort of reminds me of what we've studied about the idea of Sophia. Generator forms.
Right. Again, it's valid. It's just, when we've just heard him go on in the way he has, you want to say, so what? Where's the automorphism in your life? See, that he doesn't mention. But he gives some broad professorial description of synchronicity in another language, and then doesn't ask what it had to do with himself. That's what that dream was talking about. I felt uncommitted archetypal thinking. So that continues over to 70, and all the author does there on top of 70 is say, well, this reproduction of form, that's about archetypes. And an archetype is constellated inwardly and outwardly in a synchronicity. Nothing new. Now remember, all of this is around his feelings for von Franz. So let's read a little bit more. There at the middle of the last indented quote on page 70, the Platonizing direction. I'm going to skip the first sentence. Professor Jung prefers the last, in particular in his book Psychology of the Transference, that possibly comes into consideration for us here. I think the Platonizing direction means this parallel between the inner form and the outer reality, that there's an idea of a chair somewhere and then there's a chair. We take that internally, that there is an archetypal form prior to an outer experience. So that's all that's about. So Jung, what he's saying is that Jung is using that as his model for psychology of the transference. Now, this is a guy with problematic feelings for a woman. And then he writes, some time ago, I studied this book only fleetingly. See what I mean? If he were serious, he would have gotten really serious about understanding what is happening to me. So first he dismisses it, and then he'll start belittling it. Namely, for a particular reason, on the title page it is written that the book is for doctors. Well, so what? He has an intellect, and he's done quite a bit of therapy. And about these, I don't have a whole lot good to say. But these are the very people who could help him. Professor Jung is a huge exception. In general, doctors, including analysts, I must have skipped something there.
You have?
Must be. Have an unscientific mentality. Well, we've just been talking about the problem of understanding science in too narrow a way, which he is being challenged to develop, and here he draws on the very thing that he is supposed to enlarge. In addition, I hold the thesis that the future of the psychology of Shiji Jung does not in any way lie with therapy and doctors, but rather in natural philosophy, which is taught in philosophy departments.
Well, doesn't that show that he doesn't understand Jung at all? Because Jung said he was not a philosopher, and he really emphasized the fact that he was empirical.
And that what emotions are discussed in philosophy departments? I hope that in should be the future. The whole field of dream research will migrate there. You see, that's the fascist speaking. See what I mean? Remember that the conference took place. He says he should discuss his feelings in conferences in Russia, which at that time was a dictator state. This is the dictator speaking now. No room for feeling. And we're going to exclude feeling from psychology by moving it to philosophy. Now the kicker. I really want to hear your opinion on this matter. And also that you will tell me more about the psychology of transference, which he has just said is bunk.
It'd be as if you wanted to give him some slack, that he's trying to provoke her to the thing so that she will come back with a sharp answer. In every way possible. Nah.
See, I'm not codependent.
I mean, sometimes don't you resent, very narrowly one side so that you expect the other side to come back.
If there had been some affection between them and communication, I could see your point. But they were struggling to maintain a relationship.
Yeah.
Or she was struggling. And then he writes, the last sentence, if there's anything at all that can help, it is only a woman. Or else the anima. Well, the anima and woman are long gone when they hear this kind of trash. So welcome to a complicated personality. I just remind you, we talked about it before, but the dream ends talking about his feelings and calls him a transference. I don't know what to call him. I'm not sure I buy that. But anyway, I just like so much what Sybil Erkoiser-Berry wrote at the bottom of 64. Just to again remind us how important this is, and here you really feel the feminine speaking. The conscious mind cannot know in advance what the unconscious intends to achieve by a transference. That is Jung's mature position. It is not something replaying unknown past feelings, but it is something announcing a future task. And you don't know it. You don't know what it's announcing until you live through it. This is the horrible thing about therapy. It should rather, for that reason, wait until its purpose is revealed by the unconscious itself. You see, what an enormously different take on difficult emotional parts of life. You have to accept them, you have to live them, and then you can hear what message is in them. And that's what he is defending against, because he would end up like Lancelot, blubbering his way through the day. Another very powerful sentence. It has been demonstrated that one cannot come into contact with the transcendental background of one's own psyche without a relationship to another person. So these things aren't accidents. They are the way we grow. You meet somebody, you become fascinated with them, and then through that, you learn about where your life is to go. That one can, so to speak, meet a part of oneself, part of one's own self, in another person. That's what's being asked of him. And that's what any erotic fascination asks of us. It's the means whereby we discover ourselves.
So there is a feeling side somewhere in the transference that it had happened. He would have met that side.
He did meet it. He just couldn't hear it. That's that chapter.
I like what you were saying. You have to accept it first, and then you can hear.
You got to accept it and live it. Absolutely. You know, in language, other language, spirit starts in matter. What your physiology draws you to, that's where the spirit is. That's Jung's twist on Christian theology.
What philosophy?
Well, your physiology. Yeah. Not only, but among the top contenders.
And a few things in that, too.
Yeah.
And then go ahead, what you said about religion.
Oh, that's Jung's twist on the Christian idea of spirit.
Okay.
That it's separate from matter.
Okay.
Or Christendom's idea of spirit.
With the influence of Jung.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tilling is certainly something I respect. Okay, 73. We are walking into a new image now. What we've had so far has been the stranger and Sophia. And now we're going to have the Chinese woman. I think they are the three main images. Again, remember, this all started with Pali asking himself, asking his unconscious, what went wrong? How did my physics end up killing tens of thousands of people? And whether he gets it or not, we can get it. That's why it's worth pursuing. And so try to keep your feelings about him separate from the material. Because we're seeing image after image now of what is missing from the collective Western understanding of life that needs to be in time integrated into it to preserve the world. That's how I understand it. That's why I think it's so important. I thought I would introduce a little bit why Chinese. And those of you who did Number in Time remember how often she went to Chinese sources. And you may have asked yourself why. Well, this is the reason why. She was finishing Pali's task. So the presence of Chinese women in Pali's dreams indicate that a certain dimension of the Eastern way of looking at life must find a place in the West. And I think that's why she went to it in her book to try to begin to express what that is. I went through the book and I just found maybe 10 or 15 points that she made, not meant to be definitive, but just so we have some idea practically what this Chinese woman is going to be referring to.
What book are you talking about?
Number in Time.
The Number in Time book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In that book, she would often go to Eastern understandings of the mathematical concepts that she was talking about. And it was, you know, why? I mean, it was nice narrative, but now I see that she was inspired to do that because she realized from his dreams, we've got to begin looking at the Eastern way. As we discuss these issues. So I've just gone through and tried to find some of the points. I'll give you the page number if you ever want to check on them. Of course, the first big thing is that the East takes the I Ching seriously. That's on page 6. And it takes synchronicity seriously. Well, that doesn't say anything new. It just mentions that this is an Eastern idea. Of course, the other big idea is of the Tao, T-A-O, the way. And the idea in Taoism is different than Buddhism. I must say it's something much closer to my liking, but the idea in Taoism is very this-worldly. And the redeemed condition isn't a transcendence of the world. They don't try to get out of the world, but they try to live in the world in harmony with a greater plan. So, I don't know Chinese, but my understanding is the Chinese character for Tao is head over road. That you walk the road consciously. One, there is a road, the implication is, and two, that you walk it, and three, that you walk it aware. Of course, one of the other implications is that there is a plan. Now, you see, we're not all that far off from Sophia, but Sophia, of course, was excluded from the Western canon. So here I think they converge. But the idea very much is that there is a cosmic plan. And that's what von Franz, for those of you who did the book, you can worry about it, others not. This is what von Franz called the transcendental continuum. That's on page 10 and 241. Another implication of the East is that it sees numbers not primarily as qualities, but as quantities.
reverse that.
What did I say? Sorry, whatever I said was probably wrong. East sees numbers as qualities, not quantities. Sorry, qualities, not quantities. An example she tells, you might remember, a group of generals was deciding whether to attack or withdraw, and they voted, there were 11 of them. 8 voted to attack, 3 voted to withdraw, and they withdrew because 3 was a more sacred number than 8. So, mathematics is still a symbol for them. Which means that leaves the door open for scientific theory to be also a symbol. Let me see, I'm just trying to summarize this here. Another one, nothing new, but Chinese, page 95, the universe has a rhythmic structure. And for them, it's always the flip-flop between yin and yang. Good and bad. So, you know, one, it's almost like they would say condolences to your successes and congratulations to your failures, because the one is always going to turn into its opposite. It's a cyclic, not a linear understanding of events. Which, if you think about it, it's not too far off. I am much less thrilled by my successes these days. I think, okay, what's going to come next? And usually it's a crash in the head somewhere.
Kind of different from the idea of the polarity.
It's no different, same. Right. Yeah.
Did you say it was on page 95?
These are all page references to number and time.
Okay.
If you want to check, or if you ever want to look. I think another big difference, that was on page 95. Another big difference she talks about on page 120. The West says, "What shall I do?" The East says, "To what order does my conduct belong?" We do that in a way, but it's so glaringly prevalent in the East. In other words, if you're in a mess, do you fight the mess? Do you fight the people involved? Or do you say, what's my lesson here? Do you try to change it? Or do you accept it and learn from it? You know, there's a sort of a spiritual school, I guess, that I hear people say, that everything happens because it was meant to. Oh, this was meant, if it happened, it meant to happen. That's nonsense. There are some things you need to fight. And there are some things you need to accept. And there are some times when it happens, even though you don't like it, because it has a meaning. And West has got one side of that, the East the other. But I think since we are so basically, how do we change it? That the East as a compensatory point of view is becoming more important. Just because we are so one-sided. But I think it's also possible to go too far on the other side.
So could you say, when you're in this, that you need to just be in that chaos and the order will come out of the chaos? Would you say that?
Well, no, I think, it's a tough question, and one kind of feels it, and here again we look to dreams a little bit too to guide us, but let's say somebody does you wrong and steals money from you, you know, white collar wise, should you sue them or should you let that $10,000 go and learn from the event. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are two basic choices. That would be a subset of step one.
That relates to how to understand that, you know, in the World War II, the some of the Chinese cities endured atrocities, but you don't really see them rising up and trying to make the world understand what happened to it, at least except in a few books more recently. But it seems like they don't need to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, you take the Dalai Lama, you know, he said, I'm pretty sure he said, you know, they're not fighting the Chinese because he felt that that invasion of the Chinese was somehow part of their fate to deal with. That's classic Eastern, where, you know, we would fight, get them out of there.
I did hear a Chinese speaker on NPR, he's an author, a film person who was successful in China. What women were doing were jumping off cliffs in such sorrow and tragedy. Did you hear that too? Yeah, so there was, I think the women reacted.
Doing the same.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. But it just was a reaction to that mm-hmm. situation that moved me.
Yeah, I think that the typical Eastern reaction is much more quiet. That was page 120. Something we've talked about, but I just will give you the page reference to where she talks about it, is that time has a quality. That is not a strange idea to the East. Another big point, I think, is what she mentions on page 200, that meaning lies concealed in the events themselves. Meaning lies concealed in the events themselves. It's what Jung called absolute knowledge. You know, we think knowledge is a function of our point of view. Speaking of postmodernism. But this view says there is an objective knowledge apart from my knowing it in the material world. So a synchronicity, you see, is those that event knew to be there. Knowledge isn't something merely human.
How does that relate to you? I noticed that in my little reading of Gurdjieff, he has a big thing about objective knowledge. Does that relate
to knowledge? I don't know Gurdjieff, but it might be the same. I think that's very, very, very important. And to me, I loathe this postmodern stuff because it disregards this. And it's true, you as an individual may only be able to know it subjectively, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't have an objective existence. I think it's a very big distinction.
That's what Hagelin talks about in her piece. Exactly those words.
Uh-huh.
She said that's why she loves Jung, because she says that's the presence of the archetype. There's something that's transpersonal.
Right. And so rather than just be content saying all knowledge is subjective, you start developing methodologies to see what gets closer to the knowledge which is there to be known. Mm-hmm. And that is Eastern.
How does that play out in more regular terms in Chinese?
I'm not a Chinese expert. I'm just going by what she's what she's saying. But I think, you know, the implication is that I Ching knows There's a knowledge in those coins. There's a knowledge in that event. It's really, I think, just a implication of, if you really think through what you do when you throw an oracle, there is a knowledge in that material event, which is then communicating to you.
And isn't that Sophia?
That's Sophia, yeah. Yeah. So we're getting very close to that, because that's the side that was rejected from the Western canon, and it's been articulated most strongly in the Eastern point of view. Another one on page 225, which again I think is very important, is that chance is sacred. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am the game of dice. Think about that. That is, chance is God. Not law, not love, but chance. If you want to know the divine, then you try to understand the meaning of the chance events in your life. Well, all that does, in our language, is bringing synchronicity into a respectable position. But for them, it's a divine quality. Yes, God doesn't play dice.
Mm-hmm. And you said not love.
Not love, not law, but chance.
Okay.
Who was it that said he's the dice? Who did you say?
Einstein said God does not play dice.
Oh, I mean before you mentioned somebody.
Oh, Krishna says, I am the game of dice.
Okay. The game of dice.
So how do they mean the chance here?
Coincidence. That you stop and you ask, what's the meaning in this coincidence?
And also goes back to that Jung quote about, play it, but where he talks about that God is that which crosses his path for good or for bad, and interjects something into his life. And that's chance.
Yeah.
When you say coincidence, that means same as synchronicity.
Yeah. Again, none of these ideas are new to you. It's just to show how they all are respected elements of another tradition. Older than we are, yeah. And of course he's going to, now, so when he dreams of Chinese women, this is what he's dreaming of. And again, it's nothing new, but the psyche has thrown up yet another image to help him begin to ask the question, what of my and our point of view needs to change, and in what direction? Well, here's the answer. Towards the east.
And he said, before you said, we think in the West that knowledge is our point of view.
Yeah.
Postmodern. Right?
Postmodern. There's nothing but a point of view.
There's what?
Nothing but a point of view. You can never say something is something. You can only say, to me, it's this. Oh, and it's all the fashion now in marriage counseling. Yeah, I worked with a couple who were seeing one of these types. And everything my poor client would say, I mean, she was being horribly treated. Well, that was just her point of view. And then there was his point of view. So one day he punched her in the face. I said to the counselor, whose point of view is that? See, it misses that there is something going on. We may not be able to know it. Yes, the subjectivity of the people colors their perception, but that doesn't mean there's not something objective going on. Let's try to figure out what that is. And then how do we do that?
Seems like this whole Chinese in this 10 points you just gave us.
They 10 points?
Yeah.
They were 10.
Oh, cool. The new 10 steps.
It seems like they say a lot about our inability as Westerners to be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We don't listen, we're not reflective, we're not quiet. We just don't look at life in the same kind of way.
Right, we don't.
It's a challenge.
That's a
challenge. And that's why it's so hard.
Yeah. And apparently our survival depends on this.
Hmm.
I told you that Hiroshima Mono Moore dream tonight. Did I tell you that?
Hiroshima
Mono Moore? I don't remember if I said it or not. Well, I got the second, third hand, but I also saw it published. Von Franz told the story of a client who watched the movie Hiroshima Mono Moore. And it's the story of a love affair between a Japanese guy and a French woman right after the war. So they were enemies, and then now they're lovers. And then the movie ends, you don't know whether they will get back together again or not. And in the dream, the dreamer dreamt that if they did get back together, the world would survive. If the dream did not get back together, there would be a nuclear holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is that important, this material. It's talking about the shift that we need to make as a culture in the way we look at life. We've got three images now. As you know, when you do inner work, you don't get the concept, you get the image. And you live with the image, and slowly it begins to speak to you, and slowly you begin to integrate it. So this is the Western task for the next several hundred years, as I understand the meaning of Pali's dreams. Integrate Sophia, the stranger, and now the Chinese woman. They're the three main images that appear. And they're all, you know, they're all different facets of the same jewel.
I think what's interesting, though, I'm reading a book right now by Lisa C., and it's on women and foot binding. I mean, it's a fictional piece. But everything is done using these principles. So every decision is made, the date knows. We just have to, we don't make the decision that it's going to happen.
Right.
We try to understand what date on which it wants to happen.
Right.
Everything is done in this way. But what you recognize is the folly that can take you to.
Sure.
Because then there's this whole, it becomes superstition.
Right.
It goes that direction.
That's why it was rejected in the first place.
Yes. I mean, you can absolutely see the beauty in a lot of it, and you can see where we certainly could welcome more of that, but we recognize that it can go out of balance on either side. Mm-hmm. And it really is this ability to try to bring the two together, which I think is what makes union work for me so appealing.
Yeah.
Because I think it doesn't just throw out the whole rational part.
Right.
You know, his empiricism absolutely drove this desire to understand it on the other side.
Absolutely.
Which brought this remarkable balance.
I agree. I he is a scientist, and I would defend that very strongly. And that's why. Because it's got to be a balance. You can't just give up one for the other.
Right. Yeah, it's painful to read about the Chinese that happened. It's also bad. Patriarchy thrives in the human forms over there.
Yeah. Well, it's 2:30. We got to page 73. Thanks to about three pages of footnotes. How far did you read? 77?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what? Why don't you just go to 82 and you'll be done with that chapter. I don't know if we'll get that far, but we might. Never know. Thank you. See you in two.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know what people do that aren't in young.
I just can't believe it. I mean, you know, and most people look at you like you're a real
Like you're a nut, yeah.
Yeah, and I just think, well, to me, it's got so much, and it's got so
It's the only tool I know that really addresses the issues.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so many answers, I think, that you've thought about all your life in a way, and then you find Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks for coming.